The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service, CNN, and the Los Angeles Times. First of all, an article from the Religion News Service published on April 20, entitled, Is This Kosher? Jewish billboards in L.A. call for humane eating practices, by Alejandra Molina, Los Angeles. Drivers in the Los Angeles region are being greeted with billboards displaying farm animals juxtaposed with Jewish common foods, posing the question, is this kosher? Chicken soup? More like discomfort food. Noshing on lox? Something's fishy about that. That schmear? It's utterly suspect. The billboards went up April 17 and 18 as part of a campaign launched by the Jewish Initiative for Animals, an organization seeking alternatives to factory farming that align with Jewish values. The Jewish Initiative for Animals notes that Jews and non-Jews spend a lot of money for kosher meat, thinking of it as a seal of approval for a product that's higher quality, healthier, and more humane for the animals and workers. But none of that is true, the organization says. Kosher animal production is no different from conventional industrial farming, according to JIFA. The organization cites data from the Sentience Institute showing that 99% of all animals are now factory farmed, including what JIFA says is virtually all kosher beef, dairy, poultry, eggs, and farm fish. The term factory farm is commonly used to refer to large industrialized facilities that raise animals for food, but it isn't a legal or scientific term, according to the Natural Resources Defense Council. When people hear the word kosher, they have an association as to the way this animal is being treated, and our response is that is no longer true, said Rabbi Jonathan Bernhard, executive director for JIFA. To Bernhard, the industrialization of the food process has warped the values that people hold and want to see practiced in how we treat other sentient creatures. Through this campaign, JIFA aims to shed light on the rising consumption of chicken and poultry farm conditions, aquaculture, or the controlled cultivation of fish, and the artificial insemination of cows. It also highlights the working conditions of factory employees. The United States Department of Labor notes that meat processing workers are exposed to biological agents during slaughter and when handling meat that is freshly slaughtered. JIFA's billboards have been placed in the neighborhoods of Pico Robertson and Tarzana, as well as in the cities of Beverly Hills and West Hollywood, areas where the Jewish community is prevalent, Bernhard said. Bernhard said the messaging of the billboards is meant to be an invitation to a conversation. The billboards direct people to JIFA's website, where they can find information about farming practices. To Bernhard, the most sustainable way to be kosher is through a plant-based diet, although he said, that doesn't mean they have to be vegan. We want communities, institutions, congregations, schools to reflect upon this and work with us to change their food policies, he said. Adrian Krohn, an assistant professor of religious studies and environmental science at Allegheny College, said issues over kosher food and sustainability are not new. She noted Arthur Waskow and Zalman Schachter Shalomi discussing kushrut or eco-kosher in the late 20th century and raising the issue of rethinking the kosher system given the rise in processed industrial food. Now, as more people are paying attention to the climate crisis and the ways agriculture contributes to carbon impact, Jews are starting to say there might be a better way to do this given the impact that our food system is having on the planet, said Krohn, who teaches a Judaism justice and food class. Crone, who serves on GIFA's board of directors, does acknowledge the difficulty of limiting certain foods that are so entwined with Jewish identity, especially for Jews who may not be going to services every week and only celebrate a few holidays. What they do on those holidays becomes proportionally more of their Jewish identity, and it becomes really important that the food they are eating is representative of their sense of what it means to be Jewish, she said. In 2019, congregants at Temple Beth Israel of Highland Park in Eagle Rock, one of the oldest synagogues in L.A., gradually transitioned to only eating vegetarian meals after hosting a vegan Passover Seder that was well attended and received. Rabbi Jason Rosner, who joined the synagogue in 2019, said congregants have discussed sustainability issues concerning kosher. They've noted the Jewish principle of Zar Bal Hayim, which prohibits causing unnecessary pain to any creature, and have also considered the working conditions of workers in processing plants. Kosher meat, Rosner said, must be produced in a manner that honors the employer-employee relationship. Now that most communities in the progressive Jewish world and some Orthodox synagogues believe that global warming and climate change are issues that need to be addressed, we believe in the Jewish value that we have to take care of our planet, said Rosner, who is vegan. Rosner said he has seen more high-profile rabbis coming out as vegetarian and vegan, like Rabbi Shmuley Yanklovitz, as well as a focus on vegetarian Jewish food. He noted the Vilna Vegetarian Cookbook, the first vegetarian Yiddish cookbook in 1938 that was newly translated in 2015. We believe in the Jewish value that we have to take care of our planet, Rosner said. High carbon emission foods, especially things like beef, have become a no-no for people who believe that we are ethically bound to take care of this world. Now an article published by the Religion News Service on April 14, entitled White House Appoints New Muslim Community Liaison by Jack Jenkins, Washington. President Joe Biden has appointed Mazen Bazrawi as a senior advisor and White House liaison to American Muslim communities, making good on a campaign promise to fill a slot eliminated by former President Donald Trump, according to a spokesperson for the National Security Council, where Bazrawi currently serves. Multiple Muslim groups have publicly hailed Bazrawi's expected appointment in recent weeks. With his extensive background in civil rights and advocacy, this is a great step forward in the push for Muslim representation and inclusion, and we are excited to see what Bazrawi brings to this role, read a statement from the Muslim Public Affairs Council, which broke the news of Bazrawi's appointment at the end of last month. The Council on American-Islamic Relations also praised the appointment, with Edward Ahmed Mitchell, the group's deputy director, saying in a statement that he hoped Bazrawi would work to address issues such as institutional Islamophobia within federal law enforcement programs, the threat of hate crimes, and protecting religious freedom. Spokespeople for the White House Press Office and the NSC confirmed the appointment. Trump had changed or eliminated many of the faith-based positions created by earlier presidents, especially those instituted by former President Barack Obama. During the 2020 presidential campaign, the Biden-Harris website declared that, as president, Biden would start with restoring the White House Eid celebration and filling the position of Muslim American liaison in the White House Office of Public Engagement, both eliminated by Donald Trump, to ensure a wide range of Muslim American voices are heard within his administration. Prior to Bazrawi's appointment, Mashtayan Ahmed, the NSC's outgoing director for partnerships and global engagement, filled the liaison slot in a temporary capacity. Biden also made good on the promise of a White House Eid al-Fitr celebration, marking the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, with a virtual event due to the COVID-19 pandemic in 2021 and an in-person event in May 2022. Prior to joining the NSC, where he will continue as Director of Partnerships and Global Engagement, Basrawi served as a trial attorney in the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, where in 2012, he successfully defended the right of the Islamic Center of Murfreesboro in Tennessee to open a mosque in the town. Basrawi also worked for Obama's 2008 presidential campaign before being appointed as a special counsel to then Assistant Attorney General Tom Perez in the Justice Department Civil Rights Division. In addition, Basrawi is chairman of the Virginia Board for the Blind and Vision Impaired, where he has served since being appointed by Governor Terry McAuliffe in 2017. Now an article from the LA Times that was published on the 19th of April, entitled Plans and Works to Preserve Monastery of Angels in California, by Deborah Netburn, Los Angeles. For 90 years, the Monastery of the Angels was home to a cloistered community of Dominican nuns who lived, prayed, and baked their famous pumpkin bread on the rambling 4-acre property tucked into a hillside in the heart of Hollywood. But in recent years, the number of nuns living on the property fell from a high of 45 to fewer than 6, part of a trend playing out in religious institutions across the country as religious orders and congregations shrink. When the last few sisters were relocated in the fall of 2022, neighbors and supporters of the monastery grew concerned for the future of the property many had come to see as a spiritual oasis. Now, in what some say is a modern miracle, it appears the Monastery of the Angels may be preserved after all. The Dominican friars of the Western Province announced that they have teamed up with the Dominican nuns to seek proposals to restore the monastery and leave the chapel and pumpkin bread business intact. Our sisters loved the Hollywood Hills community, and we look forward to working with the friars, interested parties, and the neighborhood to ensure our beloved monastery can continue to be a blessing to all. Sister Maria Christine Balo, the former prioress of the monastery, said in a statement, "We want to be open to every creative and interesting idea out there and do our due diligence to evaluate every possible angle in saving the monastery," said Chris Hanzelli, head of strategic initiatives for the Dominican Friars of the Western Province. "We are united with the community to protect the treasure of the monastery for generations to come." The friars and nuns cannot predict what proposals will come their way, Hanzelli said, but they are committed to preserving the chapel as a sacred space for the community, preserving the pumpkin bread and candy making business, and protecting the broader property for the neighborhood so it can continue to be a blessing for everyone. To oversee this process, the Dominicans are working with Dominique Dutra, a real estate agent based in Fremont, who has devoted the last 15 years to helping religious communities across California utilize their properties in creative ways. Faith-based organizations have been declining in terms of their numbers and now have a lot of surplus or underutilized land, Dutra said. Instead of selling their properties to the highest bidder, many of those organizations want to ensure their land continues to serve the greater community. "For people of faith, we look at it as we want to give God the opportunity to interject and show us that miracles still can happen," said Dutra, who is Christian. "That's really the priority here, to interject some hope and a positive perspective back into the world." The Monastery of the Angels was founded in 1924 and was supported in its early days by some of LA's wealthiest families, including the Doheny's, the Dockweilers, the Vandekamps, and the Hancocks. In 1934, the order moved to a sprawling Hollywood estate that had belonged to a copper miner owner, Joseph Giroux, which it bought for just $10. 14 years later, Catholic women in Los Angeles raised funds to build the sisters a new cloister, chapel, and office complex on the same site, designed by celebrated architect Wallace Neff. Since then, the monastery has served as a spiritual refuge for people of all faiths. Whenever we take people on that property, we see how they slow down and have peace and feel welcome, said Kim Cooper, a cultural historian who has led tour groups to the monastery. L.A. is a giant pool, and the water is cold and deep. There are a few reefs to land on, and the Monastery of the Angels is one of them. Along with her husband, Richard Shav, Cooper is one of the founders of the Monastery of the Angels Foundation. The group, which has no affiliation with the monastery or the Dominicans, was formed in January 2022 to ensure the monastery remained a sacred space in Los Angeles, including raising enough funds to buy it if necessary. Now, its members hope to submit a proposal for the property themselves. Hollywood was founded as a city of gardens and churches, Shave said. Now we have an opportunity to go back to the roots of Hollywood. Ideally, the friars and sisters will be able to determine which direction they want to go over the next 6 months. However, if they need more time, they will take it. We want to make sure we do this right, he said. The property is owned by the Monastery of the Angels, but Dutra said it will also consult with the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, the Vatican, neighborhood members, and others. Establishing a new long-term plan for the monastery is likely to be a multi-year process. But he had one warning. Not everyone will get what they want. Of course there will be push and pull. We have to meet the long-term interest of the sisters because they are getting older and will have senior care requirements, he said. But we want to be as transparent and respectful of everyone's interests as possible. Now an article published by CNN on April the 15th entitled "A Viral Scene from Netflix's Beef Nails a Very Specific Religious Experience" by A.J. Willingham. Netflix's comedy drama Beef begins with a fight in a parking lot and never really slows down as it weaves a tale of manic revenge between two strangers. However, the show's detour into the workings of a Korean-American church have struck a particularly powerful chord with viewers. In an early episode of the 10-episode series, Danny, played by Steven Yeun, visits a church. A series of events and an escalating traffic-related beef with Amy, Ali Wong, have brought him here. He nearly set Amy's car on fire in a previous scene, pulling back only when he saw her daughter sitting inside. It wasn't exactly a holy moment. As soon as he crosses the threshold, he and the audience are transported into a visceral moment of evangelical church worship. There are hands aloft in prayer. There's a band singing a wrenching song about forgiveness. The soft sunlight illuminates sturdy wood pews, swaying worshipers in white gold. Overwhelmed, without saying a word, Danny breaks down in tears. Without spoiling too much, it's not the last time Danny visits, and the church becomes another character in the show. Some viewers say the details of the church's scenes, down to the exact rendition of Amazing Grace Yoon sings in one episode, inspired by contemporary Christian mega-artist Chris Tomlin, reflect a deep understanding of a very specific type of Korean-American experience, that of an immigrant church, often evangelical, Protestant, or both, and all of its joys and sorrows. For Asian American Christians and evangelicals, Beef is so culturally accurate that it was triggering, cringy to watch. Author and sociologist Nancy Wang Yun wrote on Twitter, Stephen Yeun, who rose to fame playing Glenn on The Walking Dead and received an Academy Award nomination for his performances in 2020's drama Minari, had a lot to do with these decisions. The actor's Korean church played a highly influential role in his early life. In a 2021 GQ interview, Yoon described participating and singing during services into his adulthood, including Tomlin's version of Amazing Grace that he would eventually hand-select for the scene in Beef. He felt like the most realized version of himself at his Korean church, where he didn't have to code switch, GQ's Chris Gayomali wrote at the time. In his youth group, everyone could just move through their little contained world in the fullness of who they were. Lee Sung-jin, the creator of Beef, told Variety that both his and Yoon's church experiences were woven through the scenes. We tried to do a very Korean church, happy version of Amazing Grace. That felt very nostalgic as well, because that's something my praise band growing up would have done. Yoon and Lee told the LA Times they also reminisced about strumming and singing secular songs after church. Next thing you know, we have to put Incubus Drive in the show, because he and I used to sing that after church, Lee said. While faith communities play a critical role in the lives of countless immigrant groups, Korean Americans have a unique relationship with Christianity. Historically, it began overseas. South Korea has prevalent ties to Christianity, owing in part to the fact European and American missionaries had better luck ingratiating themselves to people in Japanese-controlled Korea as opposed to other areas in Asia that had already chafed under European influence. Continuing or beginning a church practice in the U.S. gave Korean immigrants, like so many others, a place of community that helped to preserve their cultural identity. Paradoxically, it also gave subsequent generations of Korean Americans a place to explore their identity beyond ethnicity. One attractive feature about Asian American evangelicalism is that the focus is more on de-emphasizing racial minority status and emphasizing more the primary identity as Christians, Esther Chung Kim, an associate professor of religious studies at Claremont McKenna College in Claremont, California, said during a 2021 SOLA conference. So this also explains some of the sociological benefits of joining ethnic-specific churches. The numbers also reflect the pattern. A 2012 Pew Research study revealed that though Korean Americans made up about 10% of the Asian American population, they accounted for about one-third of all Asian American evangelical Protestants. However, the full impact of scenes like those in Beef can only truly resonate with people who have lived a similar experience. Some Korean Americans describe the scenes as equal parts nostalgic and a little triggering. Growing up, I always felt alienated from the Korean American community because I didn't attend church, Stephanie K. Kim wrote on Twitter. Watching Beef is like reliving that alienation. If you grew up in the Korean church, Netflix's Beef will make you laugh and cry. They got it so right, wrote another Twitter user. Beef's creators say they specifically didn't want to market the show as an Asian American-led work. Yes, these characters happen to be Asian American, but there's so much more to them than just that, Lee told Variety. Similarly, the scenes at Danny's church are so much more than they seem. It's a church, it's a Korean church, but for those who recognize it, it's a place fondly remembered or better forgotten. It's a place that speaks to a cultural history, and just as importantly, countless individual ones. Now an excerpt from a Religion News Service article published on April 18, entitled, How the Teen Mental Health Crisis is turning some youth pastors into first responders. By Elizabeth E. Evans. Braden Bishop, a youth pastor in Texas, is just 25 years old. But when it comes to working with teens in crisis, he's a seasoned veteran. Some of the teens and middle schoolers he works with are also practiced in talking about suicide. So much so that they toss out disclaimers, aware that going too far may trigger mandatory reporting. They will say deadpan in the middle of talking about a mental health struggle, "I'm not a danger to myself or others," said Bishop. Then they will kind of laugh about it and move on. But there are young people at Grace Chapel United Methodist Church in Aubrey, a middle to upper class community north of Dallas, who openly tell Bishop they have contemplated or attempted suicide. Some struggle with depression or thoughts of self-harm, such as cutting. Young women confide in him about episodes of sexual violence. Some are seniors in high school, but middle schoolers also talk about their struggles with mental health. The mental health crisis affecting many of America's young people can show up, Bishop said, in seemingly casual ways, a knock on the youth pastor's door or a small group conversation among peers. Perhaps there's less stigma now attached to talking about mental health concerns and more awareness in younger generations, said Brett Talley, Senior Vice President of Staff Culture at Orange, which provides educational and ministry resources to churches and families. It is young people, he said, who are pushing the church to be more willing to talk about mental health and how it intersects with faith. Kevin Singer, a sociologist of religion, said mental health issues among young Americans have reached epidemic levels. He cited a report released last fall by Springtide Research Institute, where he serves as a national speaker, on the mental health of Generation Z. It found that majorities of young people reported being moderately to severely depressed, anxious, and lonely. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News, so be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.